I spent nearly 2 years in the prison before I could succeed in gaining the goodwill of some of the convicts. But in the end, most of them grew fond of me and recognized me as a good man. There were four other Russians of the upper class besides me. One was a mean, abject little creature, terribly depraved, a spy and informer by vocation. I had heard about him before I came to the prison and broke off all relations with him after the first few days. Another was the parricide of whom I have spoken already. The third was Akim Akimich. I have rarely met such a queer fellow as this Akim Akimich. I still have a vivid recollection of him. He was tall, lean, dull-witted, awfully illiterate, very prosy, and as precise as a German. The convicts used to laugh at him, but some of them were positively afraid to have anything to do with him, owing to his fault-finding, his exactingness, and his readiness to take offence. He got onto familiar terms with them from the first. He quarrelled and even fought with them. He was phenomenally honest. If he noticed any injustice, he always interfered, though it might have nothing to do with him. He was naive in the extreme. When he quarrelled with the convicts, he sometimes reproached them with being thieves and seriously exhorted them not to steal. He had been a lieutenant in the Caucasus. We were friendly from the first day, and he immediately told me about his case. He began as a cadet in an infantry regiment in the Caucasus, plodded on steadily for a long time, was promoted to be an officer at last, and was sent as senior in command to a fortress. One of the allied chieftains burnt his fortress and made a night assault upon it. This was unsuccessful. Akim Akimich was wily and gave no sign of knowing who had done it. The attack was attributed to the hostile tribes, and a month later Akim Akimich invited the chieftain to visit him in a friendly way. The latter came, suspecting nothing. Akim Akimich drew up his company, proved the chieftain's guilt, and upbraided him before them all, pointing out to him that it was shameful to burn fortresses. He discoursed to him in great detail on the way allied chiefs should behave in the future, and in conclusion, shot him, and at once sent in a full report of the proceedings to the authorities. For all this, he was court-martialed and condemned to death. But the sentence was commuted, and he was sent to Siberia, to penal servitude in the 2nd Division for 12 years. He fully recognized that he had acted irregularly. He told me he knew it even before he shot the chieftain. He knew that an ally ought to be legally tried, but although he knew this, he seemed unable to see his guilt in its true light.
"Why, upon my word, hadn't he burnt my fortress? Was I to say thank you to him for it?" he said to me in reply to my objections.
But although the convicts laughed at Akim Akimich's foolishness, they respected him for his preciseness and practical ability. There was no handicraft which Akim Akimich did not understand. He was a cabinet maker, a cobbler, a shoemaker, a painter, a gilder, a locksmith, and he had learnt all this in the prison. He was self-taught in everything. He would take one look at a thing and do it. He used to make all sorts of little boxes, baskets, lanterns, children's toys, and sold them in the town. In that way, he made a little money, and he immediately spent it on extra underclothes, on a softer pillow or a folding mattress. He was in the same room as I was, and was very helpful to me during my first days in prison. When they went out from prison to work, the convicts used to be drawn up in two rows before the guardhouse. In front of them and behind them, the soldiers were drawn up with loaded muskets. An officer of the engineers, the foreman and several engineers of the lower rank who used to superintend our work, came out. The foreman grouped the convicts and sent them to work in parties where they were needed. I went with the others to the engineer's workshop. It was a low-pitched stone building standing in a large courtyard which was heaped up with all sorts of materials. There was a smithy, a locksmith's shop, a carpenter's, a painter's, and so on. Akim Akimich used to come here and work at painting. He boiled the oil, mixed the colours, and stained tables and other furniture to look like walnut. While I was waiting for my fetters to be changed, I was talking to Akim Akimich about my first impressions in prison.
"Yes, they are not fond of gentlemen," he observed, "especially political ones. They are ready to devour them. No wonder. To begin with, You are a different sort of people, unlike them. Besides, they've all been serfs or soldiers. Judge for yourself whether they would be likely to be fond of you. It's a hard life here, I can tell you. And in the Russian disciplinary battalions, it's worse still. Some of these fellows come from them, and they are never tired of praising our prison. They say it's like coming from hell to paradise. It's not the work that's the trouble. There in the 1st Division, they say the authorities are not all military. Anyhow, they behave very differently from here. There, they say, the convicts can have little homes of their own. I haven't been there, but that's what they say. They don't have their heads shaved. They don't wear a uniform. Though it's a good thing they do wear a uniform and have their heads shaved here. It's more orderly, anyway, and it's pleasanter to the eye. Only they don't like it. And look what a mixed rabble they are. One will be a Cantonist, another will be a Circassian, a third an old believer, a fourth will be an Orthodox peasant who has left a wife and dear little children behind in Russia. The fifth will be a Jew, the sixth a gypsy, and the seventh God knows who. And they've all got to live together. They've all got to get on together somehow, eat out of the same bowl, sleep on the same bed. And no sort of freedom. If you want an extra crust, you must eat it on the sly. Every farthing you've to hide in your boots, and nothing before you but prison and more prison. You can't help all sorts of nonsense coming into your head. But I knew that already. I particularly wanted to question him about our major. Akim Akimich made no secret of things, and I remember my impression was not altogether agreeable. But I had to live for 2 years under his rule. All that Akim Akimich told me about him turned out to be perfectly true, with the only difference that the impression made by the reality is always stronger than that made by description. The man was terrible, just because being such a man he had almost unlimited power over 200 souls. In himself, he was simply a spiteful and ill-regulated man, nothing more. He looked on the convicts as his natural enemies, and that was his first and great mistake. He really had some ability, but everything, even what was good in him, came out in a distorted form. Unrestrained and ill-tempered, he would sometimes burst into the prison even at night, and if he noticed that a convict was sleeping on his left side or on his back, he would have him punished next day. "You've to sleep on your right side, as I've ordered you." In the prison, he was hated and feared like the plague. His face was purplish crimson and ferocious. Everyone knew that he was completely in the hands of his orderly, Fedka. What he loved most in the world was his poodle, Trezorka, and he almost went mad with grief when Trezorka fell ill. They say he sobbed over him as though it had been his own son. He drove away one veterinary surgeon, and after his usual fashion almost beat him. Hearing from Fedka that one of the convicts in the prison was a self-taught vet, who was very successful in curing animals, he called him in at once.
"Help me! I'll load you with gold! Cure Trezorka!" he shouted to the convict.
The man was a Siberian peasant, crafty, clever, really a very skillful vet, though a peasant in every sense of the word.
"I looked at Trezorka," he told the convicts afterwards,
long after his visit to the major, however, when the whole story was forgotten.
"I looked. The dog was lying on a white cushion on the sofa, and I saw it was inflammation, that it ought to be bled, and the dog would get well, yes indeed, and I thinks to myself, what if I don't cure it? What if it dies? No, Your Honour," said I, "you called me in too late. If it had been yesterday or the day before, I could have cured the dog. But now I can't."
So Trezorka died.